Well, today, Louise is away in Vancouver at the Union of BC Municipalities Conference. And so we wish her well in discussing all the important issues facing municipalities these days. And so I am joined today by Kathy Johnston. Hello, Kathy.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. Happy first day of fall.
It's hard to believe.
I know. So the reason that we have Kathy in the studio today is to talk about the Knitted Tree. The Knitted Tree is a community project that has been going on for just about 2 years through the Salmon Arm Arts Center and is about to begin its construction and will be opening on October 2nd. So, Kathy, you're here to tell me all about this insane project. First of all, tell me about the day that you told Diana Pratt Johnson that you wanted to knit a tree.
Well, it started out really as a joke. We were, I've been going to knit odd socks. Diana runs it at the gallery on Friday afternoons. And it's a lot of fun, everybody, a lot of different people. And we would just talk about everything. And I just threw out one day, I always dreamed about knitting a tree. And Diana, all of a sudden, her eyes lit up. And she says, let's do it.
It was that easy. Let's just do it.
Yeah, let's do it. And so it was just, as I say, it started out as a joke. We were laughing about it and thinking it. And then the more she talked about it, she says, I'm going to go and talk to Tracy. And she came back and said, we're doing it. We've got a date.
Well, I remember that day. I remember that Diana came into the office and explained about your route that you were already knitting. And it was about like the free form knitting and that you had this dream. So, okay, now let's go way, way back. Why did you have a dream? Why did you always have a dream about knitting a tree?
I've always really been fascinated with fiber arts. It started off when I was about 4 years old. My grandmother taught me to knit. I remember sitting in Montreal. We'd go down there every summer and sitting on the steps, and she'd be teaching me how to knit. And it's just something that stayed with me. So I started at that age. I kept knitting. My first teaching job was in Squamish years and years back. And there's nothing to do up in Squamish in those days. And they had a course on fiber arts from Capilano College. So I thought, well, that sounded good. And I signed up for it. And they have arts drama groups coming through or actors coming through the schools and putting on performances. And I remember in the first year, there was this group, it was like a dance thing, but they had all these really neat images on the stage, and they had this big knitted sort of a cloak, and it would take on the shape of the actor under it, and it was a tree. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be fun to knit a tree?
Wow.
And it always just stayed with me. I just had this idea, it would be the greatest thing. But I thought, what do you do with a knitted tree? I mean, where do you put it? So I never really thought of doing it until that day when I talked to Diana.
Wow. Yeah. So that's actually a pretty big dream that's actually coming true right now as we speak.
It's funny how it started way back there. You put it in the back of your mind and then all of a sudden, wow.
Yeah. So let's just stay in your wonderful background, because you're such an interesting person anyway. One of the reasons why it's fun to go to Odd Socks when you're there is because there's a lot of open discussion about women's issues and all kinds of great sort of, okay, I'm just going to say it, sex issues. Okay. And that's because your career has been as the sex ed teacher, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm still doing a little bit of it. The program was cut from the district, so I am retired now and go back and do a bit. But that sort of happened as an accident too. I was teaching grade 6-7 and they were supposed to be I was supposed to teach sex ed. But I didn't have any background. I didn't know what I was doing. So I invited a doctor in. This was in another community. a small community. And we had these two, I always remember, these two really cute young doctors came into town. And they were the topic in the staff room. And I got to know one of them quite well. So I said to them in the staff room one day, I'll bet you I can get them to come in and do it, and teach sex ed to my class. And they said, no, you can't. And sure enough, he came.
Nice.
But he was so awkward, and he seemed so embarrassed. I thought, maybe it's not, doctors aren't the best to do this. So then when I came up to Salmon Arm, I was out in Falkland, and I was told that my class wouldn't get it unless I was willing to do it. But the sex ed teacher would come out and give me some training. So it started at that point, and when she left, I applied for the position under the, I was told I would get training for it. So mm-hmm. I took it on, and I just, the district was great in the training. They supported me in every way, and I just, it grew into a full-time position.
Wow. And so how many years was it full-time in this district?
I was there, I think at least 15 years.
And, but it's been cut. Why on earth would they cut it? The district is still huge. Why cut a full position?
Well, we were one of the last districts, actually, in the province to still have sex ed. When they started making all the cuts, it was one of the first positions that was cut in most districts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, see, sex and arts has a lot in common.
Yeah.
We're usually the first to go when the money crunch
right.
comes.
Salmon Arm's been lucky.
Oh, man, that's really quite terrible, though, that to know that that's one of the first things to go. I mean, that's basic information. That's anatomy. It's, you know, being comfortable with our bodies, our functions. I mean, that's really...
I think it's really important. And yeah. The kids do, too.
Of course.
But we're not the ones that make the decisions.
Oh, but it's just... I'm sorry. I'm just getting mad about it. Because it's so critical. I mean, if we don't teach them, then they're learning it from the internet.
It's unbelievable what the kids pick up. It yeah. really is. That's a lot of what I was dealing with in the last year, is what they're seeing online.
Yeah, because yeah. the extreme versions of any sexual activity is what gets the attention on the internet.
Yeah, the kids have so many questions because they're so confused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they
yeah.
think that that's normal, what they see on?
Yes, a lot of them do, or a lot of them aren't sure. So they want to know.
Yeah.
They so, just want to know, is this right? You know?
Yeah. So how do you approach that in there? They get to ask anonymous questions on paper, and because otherwise I can see where they wouldn't want to just stick up their hand in front of their 25 closest classmates and say, I don't know what's normal.
No, we did have a question bag, and the kids would submit a question without their name on it. After, like at the end of each class, and we'd open the beginning of the next class with the question bag.
Ah.
And that's how a lot of it came out. And the questions were the same right across the board. I did find by about grade 10, 11, the kids, they were very comfortable putting up their hands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was quite amazed.
Huh.
Yeah.
So what were the questions, like what were the most common questions that they'd ask?
A lot of it was around slang. Depending on the level, some kids, oh, it was so cute. In grade, hope this is okay to say on community radio, but in the younger grades, the boys were very concerned about penis size because of what they see online.
Oh my gosh.
So we talk about how, you know, they use wide angle lenses and parts appear bigger than they are. They talked a lot about that. In the older grades, we talk about birth control, STDs, a lot of questions around that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of it was just straight anatomy.
Yeah.
They didn't know. I was surprised how the kids did not know the basics.
Yeah. Because at what point do they learn human anatomy?
Yeah. They right? didn't know the proper names for the parts.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that's what, is that still missing, or has that been integrated into science curriculum or something?
Now, it's supposed to be integrated. However, I know from, I went to a lot of conferences and workshops right across the country. And even in the provinces where it is totally integrated and have terrific programs, I always thought Alberta and Ontario were two of the best. I used a lot of their material. The teachers themselves didn't teach it because they weren't comfortable with it.
Oh.
So, and I can understand that too. I mean, a lot of parents are too uncomfortable talking about it themselves, so they expect the teachers to do it.
Right.
But the teachers aren't comfortable. They aren't trained either. So it's in the curriculum, but it doesn't always get taught.
Right. And Ontario is having this huge uproar about their new curriculum, their new yes. sex ed curriculum. And parents all over the place are saying, I'm pulling my kids out of school if you're going to talk about these things. Well, then who's going to talk about them?
They don't.
About those things with them.
They don't get taught. But it's interesting, too. The majority of parents support it. I have mm-hmm. very few. There were a few families who don't approve of it, and that's fine. You know, they have the option to pull their kids, but they're the ones who always get heard.
Yeah.
The majority of people do support it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good.
But they're quite, you know,
on.
Yeah. You don't talk about what you support. You talk about
yeah,
what you don't.
Exactly. We get all upright and crazy and loud when we don't support something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. See, this is what's so interesting about you, Kathy, is that you have this incredible background of diverse knowledge and training, and having people like you with, you know, really interesting, you know, approach to life, very open and inclusive approach, be part of a group like Odd Socks and want to do a community project. It just makes it wonderful and fun.
I just think it is fun. Yeah.
And so now everybody's going to be beating down the door to get to the Odd Socks group so they can talk about sex.
we talk about everything in that group. I find working with women that way, it's sort of like when you're reading novels about, you know, they have books on knitting groups and women's groups getting together. And we really do. I mean, sometimes you learn so many stories. You never know where people are coming from.
Oh, I know.
And we have a lot of laughs and we have tears and people share the circumstances they're living under now. You have no idea. But when people are sitting there doing something, all these stories come out.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gives you an appreciation of people.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to, as I said, how do I put it? You really have to, I'm in awe of some of these women, what their experiences are and how they're getting on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever use knitting in your sex ed?
Not in sex ed. No, I thought of it once, but I never did. Because I wasn't there long enough with any group, but I thought it would be kind of fun to knit, this sounds funny, a uterus and the vagina, and then you could put the ball in it and show how the baby was born.
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
that would be kind of fun. I did use knitting in the regular classroom a lot.
Yeah.
And I always remember Friday afternoons, I had a class in Lillooet. The boys, it was quite a rowdy class. It was a hard class, some real hard kids in there. And Friday afternoons, I decided, let's try knitting. And it was some of the boys who were the hardest to reach were the ones that really got into it. And we would just find a place on the floor, anywhere in the classroom. They'd sit in corners in small groups, and everyone would knit.
Wow.
And it calmed, the whole atmosphere calmed right down.
Yeah.
And everyone got him. Yeah, just yeah. interacted. It was great.
Well, it's a bit like meditation, right?
It is.
Because, you know, to learn how to meditate, all you have to do is focus on one thing and
yes.
and just that one thing. And
yeah.
knitting can do that for you, especially when you're learning and have to focus.
That's right. Yeah.
yeah.
Or even if you're an experienced knitter, there's always more to learn.
Yeah.
So you have to turn things off and you sit there and you just, that's all you focus on. Yeah.
Nice. So now that we've heard about your wonderful background and why you've had this dream to knit a tree, let's talk about the first few months of doing this project. So you're in Odd Socks, the Friday afternoon knitting studio, and it's a creative knitting studio, correct?
Right.
I know that Diana, when she started it, she really wanted it to be not just a place where people came with their patterns, but a place where people came to experiment and really, you know, grow with the artistic form of knitting.
Right. We exchange a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's certain knitters like Jean Brighouse who are so inspirational.
Oh, she's, yeah.
Yeah.
She goes right off, yeah. right off the page.
So how did this first, how did the members of Odd Socks react when you first brought this idea to them?
I think they took it like I did, actually. It was kind of a joke. We all laughed about it. But everybody came on board. Even people, well, there were some people who were kind of hesitant. They were kind of worried about trying anything. And I find that funny because some of the people who were most hesitant became more really involved. Oh. As time progressed, they were able to let go and let do and just try things.
Yeah.
Because our philosophy was there is no right or wrong. Everybody kept asking, where's the pattern? How do we do this? So we give them the basics, but we said, you do your own thing.
Yeah. What a concept for some people that have been following patterns all their lives.
It's hard to break out of that.
Yeah.
It really is. But I really think people appreciate how much they've learned because of it. And not just learning about yourself, too, taking that step.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking a risk.
Yeah.
But you can always rip it out.
Well, that's right. It's what's the worst that can happen, right?
Yeah. And we kept saying when people say, oh, we dropped a stitch, I don't know what we're doing. We'd say, look at a tree. Is it perfect?
That's true, because the first part of this project was the roots.
Right.
Right.
We thought, Diana had that idea, well, let's start with the roots. I hadn't even thought of roots. And I thought, oh, the trunk and leaves. But she said, we'll start with the roots. So we got the concept of the I cord. And we got people learning how to do that. And then they just expanded on their own. They increased the size. They added different yarns. They went all off in different directions. And it was really fun.
Yeah. I found that was my first experience. I'm not a knitter. And so I think I learned to knit 20 years ago for 5 minutes and then never really did after that. So coming back to knitting to do this project was really fun. And with the root, I found it so much more expressive to be able to do that, to increase stitches and decrease and add all the fuzzy yarns and the eyelash yarns and all those crazy things to make it really unusual and colorful. Like, what an opportunity to be artistic.
And that's the thing with knitting, I found. A lot of people assume, like yourself, I always think of you as an artist. Artists don't take on to knitting because you follow patterns.
Yeah.
And I find that myself. I hate following patterns. But I like a basis to start on, but I find I have trouble following a pattern. Mm-hmm. It's like a recipe. You do your own thing.
Yeah.
But so this... people like you, they picked it up and thought, I don't have to follow a pattern. Look what I can do.
Yeah.
And it's like sculpturing with fiber.
Exactly. And that's what this project, I mean, we can talk a little bit about this right now because it's appropriate, that some people have compared this to yarn bombing. When I explain that we're doing this big sculptural knitted tree, they say, oh yeah, well I saw a yarn bomb tree at the such and that. I'm like, no, it is not yarn bombing. And it's actually really hard to explain to people what we're doing, because they relate it so easily to this fad of yarn bombing.
Yeah, there was a lot of yarn bombing that was going on for a while. I saw some down in Washington State a while back, and it was neat. But all they do, they were just, I think it was calling attention to knitting. They were knitting pieces and tying them around trees mm-hmm. or whatever just to decorate the trees. We're not doing that. We are creating
right.
a tree.
Yes, it is a sculpture.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a community sculpture. It is not just a small group of ladies that meet on Fridays that are making this. It has grown so much.
That has been overwhelming. We've got hundreds of people contributing, and not just in our community. It's gone out of the community. There are people all over who have been sending us pieces.
Yeah.
People coming through town. Come into the gallery, see what we're doing, and then they want to help out. It's been overwhelming the way it's taken over.
Yeah.
And that was part of my idea, too. My son years ago, well, not years ago, a couple of years ago, he was in in Kamloops, is attending TRU as a social worker. And he did a practicum in Cuba. And when he came back, he just kept talking about and writing about how in Cuba, everything was centered around the art center. And you had young people and old people, seniors, all ages, and everybody involved in the arts, and how fascinating it was. And I just thought it would really be fun to bring people together and put this, see what would happen.
Yeah.
And it has been truly amazing.
Wow. And it has been, it's been interesting seeing the roots come in by mail and by FedEx.
Yes.
Because the people who found out about the project and maybe took away a little root kit, because we had created these lovely little root kits because we'd gotten a lot of donated yarn, which is fantastic because it was all different thicknesses and colors. And so our summer student, I remember last year, spent a lot of time rolling little balls of yarn and making these little kits with 5 balls of yarn plus instructions on how to knit an I-cord. And then we had a draw for anybody who submitted a root 25 feet or longer. And so some people took those root kits away and then to wherever they lived, right? Like Sechelt and Brisbane and Fairview, Alberta, like my friend up in Fairview, and then finished their route, mailed it in. And so when we get these little funny squishy packages from FedEx, it's pretty fun.
You don't know what's in them.
I know, it's like Christmas every single time.
And those kits were really good because it gave people the basis on how to do it. But it was only enough to get started. So then once they got the feeling of how to go, they just did their own thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we wanted.
Yeah. And it was really nice that there was an opportunity to use leftover yarn bits from other projects. Lots of people either had or knew somebody who had lots of yarn that wasn't enough to do anything with, but nobody wants to throw out yarn, right?
No, you'd never throw out yarn.
No. So it was just there to, waiting for a project like this where you could be more expressive and just use whatever colors.
Yeah, I've been, I find it interesting too, the people who have told me they've dropped off yarn at the gallery. You know, they had old yarn, they didn't know what to do with it. They take it down.
Yeah. What some people don't know is that we cream it before we even let it go out into the world. We're like, oh, I love this blue. And we like grab a little ball each before it goes out into the community to get picked over. Anyway, okay, so the roots happen and then the bark was the next kind of phase.
Yeah, now that part we really worked on. We were wondering how we were going to do it. And we even experimented with knitting, tearing up strips of fabric. Mm-hmm. And knitting those. And they looked neat, but it was really quite cumbersome. Mm. It was very, very thick, and you had to go through the process. So then we came up with the idea of knitting squares. We gave them a certain size, an approximation, different squares of different browns. That's their choice. And then when they had knitted the squares, and experiment with different stitches. Don't just do plain things, do whatever. And then we got into needle felting it. And so a lot of them came in very artistic, all different designs. The needle felting was something a lot of people had never tried too, and it was fun. And then you can sew on beads, buttons, once you've got it felted.
I mean, you can just keep going
to the end. And you also need plain pieces to set off the fancier pieces.
Yeah.
So you have to have the combination of both. So it worked really well.
Nice. And so some of the members of Odd Socks have been stitching the bark pieces together.
Right.
To make the long pieces for the tall tree.
Yeah.
So that's been in progress for a few months now.
Yes, that has. And that will be wrapped around once we get the trunk up and sculpted, that'll be wrapped around.
Yeah.
That consists of the bark.
Right.
Yeah.
And the what's interesting is Jean Brighouse, if anybody out there remembers, during the Peak Year exhibition in 2014, she knitted and then wet felted beach pieces that the dead salmon, her knitted dead salmon, laid on. It was just fantastic. It was so beyond amazing. Those little knitted carcasses.
So creative.
It was. So she donated her sand pieces, her sort of river bottom pieces, to use as a transition piece, I guess, between bark and roots, and which is great. And so we had two big group projects that helped create the brown transition from the bark to the roots. One was the Pathfinders group, so the Girl Guides Pathfinders, which is think Pathfinders is grade 6, 7, 8, or
I think
or
so.
7, 8, 9.
Middle school.
Yeah, middle school to grade 9, somewhere in there. And we had a group of girls come in and do needle felting, and everybody took a little section and needle felted some, you know, just little root shapes and some ferns and, you know, just some wonderful freeform kind of needle felting on it one evening. And then we took those same pieces to Mount Ida Muse and let a whole bunch of people from that facility needle felt on too. We had to teach them to needle felt some of like, and it was actually those ladies, I think all ladies, I think maybe just one man in the whole group, but they took to needle felting like ducks to water, because we figured that those ladies have been doing needlework all of their lives. So even though a lot of them were suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia or, you know, other kinds of memory loss, as soon as you showed them how to do it, they knew exactly what to do. And they just worked. They were like from the working generation. It was only kind of funny when they forgot what they were doing. Like you had to kind of every 10 or 15 minutes when you'd come back and you'd find one just looking lovingly at the little piece she'd just done. And she's like, what's this? We'd have to say, well, you did that. And well, did I? And so we'd show them how to do it again. She's like, well, I don't have a needle. Yes, you do. It's in your head. Oh, okay. So you'd show them to do it again and they would just go like crazy. And they did a beautiful job. So that'll be part of it too.
Everybody took to the needle felting. I always thought it was a good thing when you were angry or frustrated, you get out your needle, because you just pound.
Yes, it's true.
And we used to laugh about that at our meetings too. You can just pound the fabric and get all your frustration out.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Okay, so the bark and stuff was mostly done. Now the leaves was a whole thing, because that actually did require a pattern.
Right. We did come up with patterns for the leaves. And we didn't want just green leaves. I mean, it's the fall.
Yeah.
So I am really impressed with the leaves that have come in. We've got every color imaginable.
Yeah.
And even the other day, I was sitting out on my deck looking at the trees in the backyard, and I was looking at the colors. And if you look at leaves, they are every color.
Yeah.
And so it's magical. It really is.
It is.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing for me to learn how to knit a leaf, because that was learning all those little abbreviations in a pattern.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people, again, like reading language. The pattern. Some people, it was a challenge getting out of the reading of the pattern. Other people, the challenge reading the pattern. But I always say when reading a pattern, don't read ahead. Just do what you're told. Don't question it. Don't read ahead. And it works.
Well, that's good advice.
And people found that. Yeah.
So how many leaves do you think that you've got right now?
I don't know. When at the beginning, Diane said, how many do we need? I said, a million. I'm just being silly. But we have a couple of boxes of leaves, just full of boxes, full of leaves. Yeah. People, again, there's something you can knit very quickly.
Yeah.
And so people just sit and they drop them off at the knitting shop. They drop them off over at the gallery, whatever.
Yeah.
We've got a couple boxes.
So I think that when Wendy Charlebois was wiring them, I think at last count, she was at 600. I'm pretty sure. But and I'm sure there's been lots more since then.
There's been a lot more come in.
Oh, it's exciting. We didn't talk about sex the whole last part.
Oh.
We should talk about sex again. We will talk about it at the end.
Okay.
Because I've got something for you. You're going to love
it. Any questions?
Yeah. It's always been Kathy's dream to knit a tree. And here it is coming true. And we've got more than, I know at last count, 280 people are involved with this project. How many times have you done something with 280 people? Not very many.
Not very often.
And so we've got the roots and we've got the bark and we've got the leaves. And then the last couple of stages was actually building some structures for them to go on. So there was branch wrapping and wet felting.
Right.
For the big branches.
Right.
So tell us about how some of that happened.
I found it really interesting how this project has evolved. Every time we hit sort of an obstacle or where do we go from there, somebody comes in with something for us. And we were wondering what we can do. We needed some sort of fleece. And a couple days later, someone came in with bags of alpaca fleece and said, can you use these? They were moving or something. And Diana, again, just, oh, here we go. So we got this idea of wet felting them. Wet felting is different than dry felting. We wanted them pretty rough. It doesn't have to be refined like you see in a lot of wet felting. I mean, this is bark. Mm-hmm. So we've had a few workshops, and we've just put things out. We've had little kids, as young as 3 years old. I even got my four-year-old grandson to do a piece. Right up to seniors, and we've just, you wet it down and you pound it and roll it and treat it harshly, and it turns into felt. And so we've done a lot of that to wrap the big branches.
Right.
And it looks really effective.
That's so great.
It is. It was just a really, as I say, it was just there when we needed it.
Yeah. And so installation has begun in a way. Like
yes.
Right now, as we speak, the room that Experiment in F sharp minor was in is being dismantled. That's today and tomorrow. So this week, all the Odd Socks and anybody else who's interested is coming to the lower level of the Art Center between 1 and 4 to help construct the branches.
Right.
Right. So how's that been going?
That went really well. Yesterday was our first day, and we were all kind of nervous about it. Are we going to be able to get this up? But after yesterday, I think we all slept really well last night. We just put up a few stations, and people came in. They could either wrap branches. We took branches off. I had a curly willow tree, so we cut off the branches last year when I trimmed it back, and we've been wrapping those in fiber and then in wool. Then we've been wiring the leaves to give them a bit of body and tacking them onto the branches. So I was amazed how much we got done in such a short time with everyone working together.
Yeah, because you had about 9 or 10 people down there yesterday, right?
We did.
So that shows what a team can really accomplish in 3 hours.
That's right. Yeah. It was amazing.
And then you've got all this week, and we also have culture days. I don't know if you knew this. Guess what? I volunteered you for this.
Oh. Uh-oh.
So culture days is I think it's a provincial thing. Maybe it's federal. Do you know?
I heard it on the radio this morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were talking about it. And they mentioned our project.
Really?
Yes, they did.
Oh, that's so great.
Yes, you can go to Salmon Arm and tie leaves on branches.
Well, fantastic. I registered us, but I have no idea who takes that information and what they do. But anyway, the Culture Days concept is it's a 2 or 3 day event, and arts organizations are encouraged to have behind-the-scenes events free to the public. And so we've never in the past been in a situation where we've been behind the scenes of anything at the end of September, right? Like it's usually the third weekend in September. And we're only an installation like after that.
Right.
Usually that would be the last weekend of a show, and then we would be an installation the week after. But in this case, because we needed a week to take down Experiment and we needed a week to get the tree up, we're halfway in between installation. It's perfect. So we're inviting the public to come in and help with this construction. And so on Saturday between 11 and 4, people can come into the gallery. We'll have a good portion of the trunk constructed, I think.
I hope so, yeah.
But mainly the project will be the branches, right? The wrapping and the leafing of the branches.
Because we can't have too many.
Yeah, and you can't do it when they're up. So you have to do them all when it's all down.
Right.
And then when we start construction, we can't have, like, we can't do all the lower stuff until all the branches are suspended. So they've got to be second, right? Like the structure, the trunk comes first, then the branches, then everything else, then the leaves and the roots that are on the ground and, you know, all the stuff that's around the outside of the gallery. So we actually do have to kind of get those branches done. So anybody who's interested in being part of this, which we know at least 280 people are, can come in on Saturday, September 26th and help with the installation.
Yeah, when I was listening to that this morning, I thought that just fits in with what we're doing. The whole concept of getting the community involved in the Art Center.
Yeah.
It was talking about how the arts are always the first to go and how important it is to people. And through this, we can see how important it is, even for mental health. And I just thought, wow, the timing couldn't be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, things are just falling into place.
Yeah. Oh, everything aligns when you have good intentions and good energy behind something,
it
right?
It seems to be.
When it's creative energy and it helps people as individuals as well as people in groups, I think then everything will align for you. And that's been a big part of this, right? It's not just people being isolated in their homes knitting parts of a tree.
No.
It's absolutely been opportunities to gather. And that's so critical.
And some of the people, that was so important for them. It was their only, some of the women who came, they were caregivers to partners or parents who were getting older and needing support all the time. And it was their only time they could get out and get a break. And they would come and it was so important to them.
Yeah.
And to talk about it, yeah.
That's very critical. We have to remember how there's a great phrase called creative placemaking, and that's one of our goals. The Arts Council is, and that's public art falls under that too, right? When you create places for people to gather and to be creative in that gathering, that's a success because you give up opportunities. Like you said, it's mental health, it's physical health, it's social, you know, like social connections. And it just does so many things to create those places where people can gather that's a priority.
And everybody does have some sort of talent. Everybody is an artist in their own right.
Yeah.
I never believed that because I never thought, you know, I could ever do anything. But I can see that with people. Everybody has a different concept of what things are, and bringing it all together.
Yeah. And everyone's creative. And this is one of those things that always has made me crazy when people say, oh, I'm not creative at all. I can't draw. And I think, well, but I would never say I can't play piano, so I'm not creative at all. Like, why would you take one skill that you can't do and say, that means I'm not creative?
Because we have this idea. I was one of those people. I can't draw. I can't paint. I can't do anything like that. And I think, well, then I'm not an artist. And yesterday when we were talking, you said to me, you never thought you could knit or you couldn't do things. Well, now you see, that's not true either.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have these, we put this on us. We have this image of what we should be doing or.
Yeah. And there's a difference between the capital A artist. And I think that's where the measure comes in. Some people will say, oh, I'm not an artist. I can't draw. Well, right. No, maybe you're not an artist. I'm not an accountant because I can't do my books. Right. So I would never go around saying I'm an accountant. Right. Like, just because I balance my checkbook. So it's not about being the capital A artist.
No.
It's about being creative.
Exactly.
And so you can choose a lot of different things that you can be creative in and
exactly.
You can learn. You don't have to just know. You can learn those things.
You learn them.
Yeah.
And you learn them by taking risks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So this has been a great opportunity to learn new things.
Yeah,
and some people have great stories about learning to knit or about relearning to knit or about coming back to knitting after having not knitted for many years. And there's been wonderful inspirational stories. And that's something else that's part of the project that we're doing is we're collecting the stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's been fascinating too. A friend of mine from Invermere, her mother she was a fantastic knitter and her grandmother, but this friend of mine never knit herself because her mother did so much. And her mother passed away recently and she started, they came up for the, I took them to see the exhibit last week with the salmon run. And she went home with her roots package and she started knitting it on chopsticks. And she said the connection she had with her mother and her grandmother while she was sitting there just trying all these things.
Oh, wow.
It really, it helped her sort out a lot in her life.
Yeah. That's really nice.
It was neat.
Yeah. I also heard a story from a friend who said that when she was little, her two sisters, her mom was a very avid knitter. And the mom managed to teach the two sisters how to knit and they did really well. But for some reason, she could not figure this out. And it was because she was left-handed and her mother and her sisters were right-handed. And so what happened was, after lots of frustration and everybody knowing how to knit and she's the only one that doesn't know how to knit, her dad, who was also left-handed, asked her mom to teach him how to knit. And so once he learned how to knit, he taught her how to knit.
That's funny because it was last summer we had a group of kids at your summer camp. the arts camp at the gallery come in, and we were knitting roots or doing whatever. And some of the kids, most of them got into it, but there were a couple of kids who just could not, and they struggled and struggled. And then it hit me, and I said to them all, "Are you left-handed?" And they said, "Yes." Yeah. But now on YouTube and with the internet, there are special tutorials for left-handed knitters.
Yeah. Does it change the way you have to do a pattern? Or can you still do it just in, you know, like on the back or something?
I don't know, because I'm not left-handed, but I know that it is. There are tutorials to show you how.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. It is different.
You can learn anything on YouTube now.
Yes.
Okay. And now, so we're in installation mode. The opening is Friday, October 2nd. The big thing about this exhibition is that it is going to be a touchable exhibition. Not only touchable, but steppable.
That'll be fun.
I know.
Very tactile.
Yeah. So people will be coming into the gallery and taking off their shoes and walking around on the roots of the tree and being able to walk right up to the tree and even touch the tree.
And we hope they can sit on some of the humps and bumps.
Yeah.
At the bottom.
So maybe they can bring their knitting and just sit, and a book.
A book, read under the tree.
Yeah. So there's quite a few events kind of planned. Of course, there's the monthly coffee break that happens on the third Thursday of every month. And so this month, it'll be a spin-in, right?
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So everybody will be, like, the spin-in just refers to, it's not just for spinners, but for anybody doing fiber arts. You can just bring your project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come and join us.
Yeah. Just with your shoes off. So that's on the third Thursday of the month. And there's artist trading cards as usual. And there's Family Saturdays. We'll have a fiber project every single Saturday, a different fiber project for kids and families to learn.
And that I was impressed with what was going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, kids are eager to learn this.
They are. They really are.
And they're fast. I mean, my kids just did finger knitting, right? Like, yeah. For their roots.
And then they feel like accomplished something, too. It's really neat to see that in them.
Yeah.
Oh, look what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you see results quickly.
Yes.
Oh, it's so exciting. I can't wait. And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Oh, Kathy, I've got one for you.
Uh-oh.
You're going to love this. So this isn't too current. It was in 2013, but there was a Huffington Post article about a performance artist by the name of Casey Jenkins. Did you hear about this? She was from Melbourne, Australia, and she did she calls herself a craftivist.
Craftivist.
Yeah. Okay. So an activist that uses craft to make a statement. So she created a form of knitting that she calls vaginal knitting.
Okay. I think I did hear something about her. Yes.
It was so interesting. The article, and there's even a video of her doing it. So what this is she, for 28 days, she created a spool of yarn that will unravel from the center, right? Like, I guess balls of yarn do that, and inserted it into her vagina, and then would pull the yarn and knit from her vagina every day for 28 days. And so, of course, it did create some, cringeworthy moments.
Right.
Because, of course, during that 28 days would be menstruation, and she would be dealing with that. And it was a white yarn, a natural fiber yarn. So she created this very long, I guess a scarf-like piece that kind of draped from different hangers that were, all over.
Like the cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, it was a really kind of a big thing because it was shocking. Right? Like, it's still, believe it shocked the art world that vaginal knitting?
I could totally understand that.
She actually called it, what did she call it again? I'm just going to look. Oh, casting off my womb. And so, and it was only called vaginal knitting because an Australian TV channel reporter called it that. And so it's kind of, it took off. But I just think it was very interesting because any kind of artwork that it talks about women's reproductive parts seems to still shock people.
It does. It does. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. We are just talking about anatomy after all, right? Anyway, so Yeah, this is kind of a thing. I think she sort of started a thing where women have been doing vaginal knitting now, and maybe not as performance art, maybe in the privacy of their homes, but just as an experiment, right?
It's right.
Part of, because actually this lady, Casey Jenkins, said that she found the experience quite arousing.
So I guess it would be.
I just heard, I could hear through the glass our engineer laugh at that. It's like, what? So, of course, she wasn't the first female artist to, you know, to do this sort of thing. There's been lots. But what was interesting is how it created such a shockwave in the performance art world. It's ridiculous. Like, it's still, I think actually there was a, I can't even count the number of art. I think I talked to you about WAC, the exhibition at Vancouver Art Gallery, where it talked about women's art, like feminist art from the 60s through the 80s.
Right.
And it was just a fantastic exhibition. I loved every minute of it. And I even bought the catalog book because it was just so interesting how many, you know, shocking but groundbreaking pieces were created by women who were dealing with the feminist issue and lots of, you know, lots of horrendous sexism and gender issues, right? Like just really, really out there stuff. So we're not brand new to this. This has been going on for quite a few decades, and yet still, it still rattles people.
It's still shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that just crazy? So yeah.
It is, because when you look at art too, I mean, they've always done male genitalia.
Yeah. Almost all the major sculptures in the world.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And so here we are with, like dealing with the inside of a woman, and we're still going, that's horrible.
Yeah. It's something you don't talk about.
Yeah. And yet it's at WAC, in Vancouver, the center atrium. Have you been to Vancouver Art Gallery?
Not for a while.
Well, you know, it's because it's in the beautiful old,
it's in the old
building.
Yeah.
They've got that gigantic round atrium, and they had a huge knitted vagina in the center of that atrium. So there you go. It all tied together.
Because I've heard about it recently. There was a show, someone in Japan, but it was with clay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She was molding, making molds. Well, using her own body and creating molds. I've heard a lot about the sculpturing, but not in the fiber arts.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. Why wouldn't it be there too?
Oh, well, it's perfect, right? It's a soft sculpture material. And so you can mold it and change it, which is exactly what our bodies do.
Exactly.
So it's perfect.
It is.
And I just...
Shake up the world.
But don't you think that's a hilarious combination of your two big sort of...
I do. Because when I retired, I thought, well, instead of talking about penises and vaginas, I often thought maybe that's what I should knit when I was working as a joke. Knit a vagina and knit a penis. I thought, well, when I retired, I'll knit a tree.
Like, where did that come from? Yeah.
But it it all makes sense when you think of how we are coming. Women are taking more power, and we've got to get out of this. It's okay for the men and not the women.
Yeah, yeah. We do have to understand ourselves better. We have to understand and know our bodies better.
And it's okay. It's just a body part.
Yeah, it's just a body. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe we should think about the next project.
We've been talking about that. What are we going to do next?
I think I mentioned that because, of course, every time I do any kind of large installation at the gallery, you learn how to do certain things, right? You learn so much, and you learn a lot about your participating artists. And so every time I do one, I start thinking about the next one.
Yes.
And people that I'm doing things with will say, oh, don't think about the next one. Just let's get through this. And I can't. I feel like we learn stuff. And so how else will we improve unless we learn and then do it again?
And do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I never dreamed I would be involved in anything like this.
Yeah.
But it's just evolved. It wasn't planned. It just happened. It just evolved. And I'm learning so much from that too. And there are no right or wrong answers.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be all a big experiment, really.
Yeah.
And we do have parts that are still coming in for the tree because we know that there are some people that just found out about it and want to do something.
Right.
So we'll probably continue to add to the tree as long as, you know, as long as the exhibition is going on.
I could see that. While it's still hanging, if people bring things in, we can still add it to the tree.
Yeah.
And it's funny what people are doing. One woman's doing a squirrel. We have a bird's nest. Everybody just has different ideas of what needs to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
What is a tree? I mean, it is a community for animals, too.
It is. It's a whole ecosystem.
It is. It is.
It's going to be so awesome. I'm so excited. So one of the wonderful things about the gallery and the people who support it is that we have exhibition sponsors who really get behind an idea and a show. And this is a really great example of one. Goody Hupfauer got behind this project very early on, and she just came right in and said, I want to sponsor this.
She's so much fun.
Oh, she is.
Yeah.
And so as a sponsor, and it's not only about writing a check, right? It's about sort of being involved. But her and I have been talking about what's going to happen to all of these parts after the exhibition. So we had an idea. I'm really excited about it. If anybody out there knows what the roots look like, they're basically like little tubes, knitted tubes. And some tubes are bigger and some are smaller, but lots seem to be about an inch or so, right?
Yeah, they start off quite small.
Yeah. So we're going to take all of the leftover roots. Anybody who wants their pieces back, like their bark pieces and their leaves, can try to come and figure out which leaves are theirs. But bark for sure. Can pick them up at the end of the exhibition. And some people will actually make things, I'm sure, out of the parts that they created.
Yeah, or just have a little souvenir too.
Yeah. But I think the roots will mostly still be there because most people used up their random leftover bits and are happy to just make them go.
Yeah, and what do you do with the root?
Yeah. Well, I know what to do with a root. So Goody and I have this idea that we're going to stitch the roots into a rug, like into a giant coil rug.
Oh, that would be neat.
Yeah. And you know what we're going to use it for? For school tours at the gallery.
That would be great.
Yeah. So we'll be able to just roll it out and the whole class will be able to fit on this squishy little rug. Won't that be amazing?
It'll be little, it'll be big. It'll
be huge.
And just the textures in it.
Yeah. And there'll be kind of bumps and changes.
And you know, kids just love touching stuff.
Yeah. And it'll be the thing in the gallery they can touch, right? Because we've got most of our exhibitions are no-touch exhibitions. So
yeah. And even when they're sitting on it or listening to someone talk, they always want to be touching things. And that would be,
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's fantastic.
I am so excited about that. So it's not that I'm looking forward to the end of the exhibition at all.
No, but it's going on.
Yes.
It's going to continue.
It will live on. Yes. And it will be of wonderful and appreciative value to the gallery for many years and for all those children that will be visiting the gallery. And we'll always remember this project because every time we roll out that rug, we'll have to explain what it is.
What it is. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So you could even sew some of the leaves on it.
We could. Well, and I think that Goody and I are going to try to do a couple of open stitching days where anybody can come and help stitch this thing together.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
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 I'll have to come in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're not going to see the end of this project, Kathy. It will just go on and on. And then we'll have to talk about the giant knitted vagina after that.
Yes. Maybe that could be our next one. We could do anatomy.
Yeah. Just anatomy.
I mean, hands, arms, feet.
That's brilliant. I want to talk about
penises,
that.
Penises, vaginas.
No, I think that's very valid because we're in a situation where, like you said, it's been cut from schools and we're somehow, you know, there's a lot of distorted information out there. Maybe it's time to do a real exploration of what our bodies actually look like, even inside, even our organs. What does a heart actually look like, right?
It's funny, every time I throw out a joke about that around the Gart Gallery, people think, let's do it.
Well, I think because, it's just our thing, right? It's what we do because we're always reacting to people's, like, to current issues.
Yes.
And that's what contemporary art really is. It's just communication. It's our storytelling. It's whatever we can do that talks about our identity.
Yeah. And it brings out, some people love it, some people don't, but that's part of it, isn't it? Everybody is different.
Yeah. And when your reaction, it doesn't all have to be pleasing.
No, it can be, it makes you think.
Yes. That's exactly what we want to do.
Yes.
And this knitted tree will make you think, it'll make you just love and appreciate, and it'll make you laugh and cry, and all the stories associated with it will be really amazing.
It is. The tree itself is a community. It's not just community art, but we created a community, like a tree. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You created a community of knitters,
a community of knitters,
fiber artists.
And the tree is a community in itself. People sit under a tree. They talk under a tree. You read. You eat from a tree. You know, animals live in a tree.
It's so exciting. What a wonderful success. Congratulations on an awesome dream and an awesome project.
Wait till next Friday. then we'll be... Hopefully it'll all be.
Yeah, we'll breathe then, yes. Maybe. Okay, so Friday, October 2nd is the opening.
Right.
Opening night starts at 7 o'clock. And remember that you'll be taking your shoes off. So if you're going to wear your fancy shoes, you're not going to be able to show them off. And then all of the Saturdays for families, all Fiber projects, the spin-in on the third Thursday, which I think I'm not entirely sure. It must be the 16th.
I think it's the 16th.
Yep, so yes. Thursday 16th between 2 and 4 p.m. is the coffee break and spin in. Bring your projects. And this Saturday, September 26th, between 11 and 4 is Culture Days, behind the scenes, help install the tree during an open public installation time.
And that just ties it all up.
Yeah. 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 And sponsored by our wonderful Goody Hubfire. It's just going to be so fun. I've almost forgotten how to do opening nights because I haven't done one since July, right? I'll see if I remember what to say.
Oh, it'll work.
It'll all work. Thank you very much, Kathy. This has been really a delight to talk to you about this and about all your background. And
thanks. It was fun.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you came.
Thank you.
Remember, everyone, that you can find more on Facebook at Salmon Arm Arts Centre or our website at salmonarmartscentre.ca. And that, of course, is center spelled the Canadian way with an R-E. See you next time on Artscape. Louisa will be back next week, and we're going to be talking to Seal Skull Hammer. Ooh, I'm excited about that.